There is an endless sea of podcasts about entrepreneurship. Talking about it, but not living it. We live it every day. This is Inside the Wolf's Den, an entrepreneurial journey with Sean and Joni Wolfswinkel, talking about real estate investing, but also encompassing general subjects in regards to owning small to medium-sized businesses, and of course, all the struggles that business owners must overcome to be successful. This is Inside the Wolf's Den, and this is Sean and Joni Wolfswinkel.
Welcome back to Inside the Wolf's Den with your hosts, Sean and Joni Wolfswinkel. Today, we actually have a special guest with us inside. It's not actually inside the Wolf's Den, but he's close here enough. With us today. Graham Parnum is actually one of our really good friends. So a little bit about Graham. Graham has been a mortgage loan officer for over 18 years with 25 years in sales and marketing. He is a leader of financial expertise in the North Texas residential real estate market, developing a significant following among homeowners and investors. Known and respected industry-wide, Graham's production consistently ranks him as a top producer in his marketplace. As an active investor himself, Graham has a strong insight on what his investment buyers are looking for to accomplish their short-term and long-term goals. Knowing that investment loans strongly scrutinize, it's up to Graham's his team of underwriters who understands rental property loans versus that as an owner, occupied residence. His general knowledge of REO properties and turnkey providers, coupled with a strong operational staff, allows his loan closings to be seamless and on time every time. I love that about Graham. So Graham, thanks so much for being here with us today. And why don't you start by giving us a little bit of background about yourself?
Well, the numbers that you said were a little dated. I've been at it for now 24 years.
Oh, wow.
I'm almost beginning to think when my shelf life is going to expire.
Blame that on Sean. He wrote the bio.
Hey, blame it on your website.
So yeah, I need to update that on the website. So I've been at it for 24 years. I've been investing for about probably 17 now, I guess. Wow. I started back in, I guess it was around 03. And then I went through the 08 bus like we all did. And I think it was up to like 28 at that time. And I ended up reducing it about half. And now I'm growing it back as well. Matter of fact, I just had a mobile notary just leave my house a moment ago. I just closed number 41. Wow. So my goal is to get up. Well, thank you. My goal is to get up to 50. And it was 35, so I surpassed that. And I said, all right, I'll go to 50. And if it gets to 50, that'll give me the opportunity to look back and either tell people where to go or keep going forward. I'm not sure which. So that's kind of what I do. I've been working with investors for, gosh, so many years. I started getting involved really heavily about 2020. And it's really weird how small this business is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Everybody knows everybody. And if you do a good job for somebody, they talk to somebody else and so forth. And my business started to grow. And then the 08 bus came along and I had to rethink the way of doing business and started going back into the owner occupied segment. And that was kind of a struggle. And then I tried to fight not being back in the investment category. And I finally, about 7 or 8 years ago, just said, stop fighting it, get back in it again. And when I did, I just grew like crazy. So we did, you know, close to 1,000 loans last year, over $100 million. Wow. So we did quite a bit of volume. We're on track to do that or more this year, but managed to build up a great team. We got about 12 people on there. You've met Aaron. He kind of mm-hmm. runs the show for mm-hmm. us. It's my show, but he runs it, of course. But we got a really well-oiled machine that we really have, you know, been tweaking for a long time. And I'm really, really pleased with all. The company that I work for is Highlands Mortgage. They're a mortgage banker. We do everything in-house. I have my staff to do that, of course, from processing to underwriting to closing, as well as servicing. That we deliver most of the loans to Fannie Mae. When we do that, we service the loans. I know, Sean, that you had one of the questions that you had sent me via email about the industry. And if you'd like me to touch on that now, I don't mind doing.
No. First of all, I just want to, you know, our listeners know, it's been a pleasure working with you and we've enjoyed it. You're one of our, or you are our top, you know, referral source when it comes to lenders, and it's mainly from what Joni mentioned in the bio, is like it closes
on time, every time.
Yeah, we just never have problems, mm-hmm. and you don't realize how that just makes, like, as a seller, you know, how, and if you sell a lot of homes, you know, that makes it just seamless. You don't have to worry about it. And you take a lot of stress and relief off us. So thank you for all you do and your team does, because I think it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, trust me, it's a pleasure working with you guys. Yeah. It really, really is. Sean, I mean, yours and your staff has been great ever since. You know, I get involved with the management company on Shadow, obviously, because I own a couple of properties with you, mm-hmm. and they're great too. Joni, you did a great job.
Thank you.
I don't talk to you as much as I should, but I should.
You're supposed to talk to the team anyway, so it's okay. But I'm curious. I didn't know you got up to that many homes recently. So this total side note has nothing to do with mortgage, but I think it'd be good for our listeners. Since you are an investor, is there any thought or pattern to the amount of homes, or are you trying to get to a residual value, or, like, I'm just curious, what's your personal goal?
Well, a lot of people in this business, they want their cake and eat it too. Mm-hmm. I want to buy something that's going to appreciate, but I want my cash flow too. Well, we mm-hmm. both know that's not really possible in most of the markets, at least that I work in. And I'm in 32 states. And, you know, we in Texas right now, our appreciation is going up. We're in double digits, mm-hmm. Which is unlike, at least in Dallas. I mean, I guess before 5 years ago, we barely made 5 to 8%, you know, going down the hill with the wind behind us. Mm-hmm. And then lately it's just exploded. So, I mean, it makes it very difficult for at least you guys to have the rents continue to catch up with it. Okay. Mm-hmm. But the appreciations are there. It's just a lot of people want the cake and eat it too. So I'm primarily after cash flow. Mm-hmm. Okay. And then I'll take the appreciation as icing on the cake and take the icing later. Okay. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm all about. That's why I said, I think number wise, once I've figured out a strategy, what I need to buy, what kind of cash flow I need to make per property, that's why I figured 50 is kind of a golden figure for me. Mm-hmm. A lot of people say, I'm going to get to 10 properties and retire. Sometimes that may not be enough, you know? Well, mm-hmm. you know, my standards of living may be a little bit higher. And don't tell anybody I just bought that car. Yeah, okay? Yeah.
I've seen what you drive, so I don't know about that.
So it really depends on what your goals are, what, you know, right. where you want to end up. And so that's kind of what I look at it.
Yeah, this is very cool. So, I mean, obviously you probably have your investments in multiple different markets, right? So, you know, this is good for our listeners to listen to as well, is when they're looking at markets, you know, what do you look for? I mean, obviously you're up to 40. What do you look for when you're vetting a market or you're vetting a team?
That's a great question. I am not one to have analysis paralysis with a bunch of spreadsheets and what's my cash on cash, mm-hmm. my caps and what's my ROIs and this, that, and the other. I'm really simple. It's like, okay, Sean, you show me a pro forma, mm-hmm. you show me the house. If it's let's just say it's a rehab. Okay. And you show me the pictures of the rehab and you show me all the things that you did to it. The pictures will speak for itself, which they normally do. I usually take a look at the age of the property and then what the age is on, you know, the HVACs and all that. Mm-hmm. And then at that point, I'll get on Google and I run up down the neighborhood, see what it looks like. And then I get on Google Earth and kind of see where it's positioned in the city. And then I make a decision. But a lot of people, they need to determine what their A, B, or C category is. Mm-hmm. You know, you're selling A properties. Because those new builds are off the hook. They really are. And a lot of people want their cake and eat it too. I want a brand new property that's going to bring me C returns. Well, we know that's not out there. Okay. The 1% rule that we've all been trying to achieve for many years. Well, that's left the playing field about 3 or 4 years ago. Right. Or even more. So, you know, that 1% is getting a little bit worse is because of the appreciations and the rents are not catching up. So you got to determine, you know, where do you want to settle for? So, I mean, if you were to send me a property right now, that's exactly what I do. I'm personally an A to probably a B minus category. I try to keep my age 85 or newer. if you ask my personal opinion. Mm-hmm. Reason being is I do want to keep these properties long term. I don't want to have to go through exchanges down the road. I'm doing that now and it's driving me crazy. And so I want to keep them all long term. I want to kind of keep my maintenance down. That's why I want to get new, you know, from new builds down to probably B minus stuff.
I think it's a good strategy. Yeah. I think as we've evolved in this niche or turnkey space, we're just seeing that the newer, it doesn't have to be brand new, but newer built, it just provides a better, experience for the client than a lot of the old stuff that we sold in the past. It's just, they eventually, even though everything's been updated or remodeled, it's still an old home. It's still a 50 or 60 year old home. And it just seems to have more and more maintenance and expense. So,
yeah.
But let's get into mortgages because that's what we came to talk about. So okay. I appreciate all that. That was awesome. And that was, I think it adds value because a lot of these are questions that we get all the time and I think our listeners will benefit. So let's take it back. Say somebody's the basics, brand new. Right? Yeah. Just, and they're looking to buy an investment property. What options are out there for lending? What do they need to know? What
is a conventional mortgage?
Who backs that? Who, you know, how does it work behind the scenes kind of deal? Mm-hmm. And then what are they going to need to qualify and what are you looking for when you're qualifying somebody to get a loan?
It's real simple. These are conventional Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac loans. These are not FHA. I get that asked all the time. Can I put 3% down on an investment property? No, you can't. Okay. These are not VA loans either. Okay. These are straight Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac loans. The minimum down pay is 20%, although Fannie does have a grid that allows for 15%. Several reasons why you don't want to do that. And I've got an outline that's in my guide we can talk about later that talks about there's really not that much of a benefit to put 15% down once mm-hmm. you throw the PMI on top and the increase in the rate and all that. So 20% down on your single families and 25 on your 2 to 4 units. But when we go through the underwriting process, it's real simple. I'll send you out a link to the application page of the website. It takes 10 or 15 minutes to fill out once we get the application back. My team will ask for income and asset documents like bank statements and tax returns. Mm-hmm. And once we get that, it all becomes math. So we take a look at three categories: your credit, how much money you make, how much money you have. It's that simple. Okay. And if it all lines up in accordance to the Fannie Mae guidelines, then we're good to go. So what we do is we take whatever you make on a gross monthly income. We take whatever debt that you have on a minimum monthly income. Like you have a revolving card, it's got $10,000 on it and you only have to pay $50 a month. Well, we only count $50 against you. So we'll take into any credit card debt, installment debt, any mortgages you may have out there, student loans, all that, that's all put on top. And then that number is divided into the income. And that comes up with a number, it's called a ratio. And then we have a back end for 50% and no greater. That's Fannie Mae guideline. Some lenders are still at 45, 43. The industry's kind of gone through some changes since March up until about 3 weeks ago. And they're trying to figure out where that flavor for risk is and where the numbers need to be. Mm-hmm. But, and we can talk about there in a second, but yeah, it's really that simple. We take a look at income, assets, and your credit. If it all lines up, we upload it through an underwriting engine, which is called DU Underwriting, which is sponsored by Fannie Mae. Yeah. They give us an answer within a matter of seconds. It comes back, says, we like you. Give me a pay stub and a bank statement. Now, if you work with other lenders, they have things called overlays, which we don't. Some other lenders or banks, if you will, they have things, these overlays like, all right, well, our flavor for risk is we'll do the Fannie Mae guidelines, but we want some additional stuff to go along with it. You know, like a fourth grade report card, you know, like that's going to help, you know? So we don't have that, which is good. So it's pretty easy breezy. And I know right up front if they're going to be able to qualify or not.
Awesome. That's awesome.
So you talked about the changes in the mortgage industry. Can you what other changes are you seeing?
Sure. Let me backtrack just a bit, for people that may not understand it, that, you know, back on the 08, we talked about earlier, it was really bad for everybody, including the mortgage industry, Fannie and Freddie, and they needed to be bailed out, which is what they did during the bailout. You know, the government stepped in and took over running those two entities, which is there in conservatorship. And they've been talking about taking it out of conservatorship for several years, and they thought they were going to get real close this year. And, you know, Trump, himself as a businessman, and he would have preferred them taking it out because he wants that to be ran as a business. Okay. Right now, when that bailout came in 08, you know, Fannie and Freddie started doing more loans, and every time they sent all that money into the treasury, you know, they're paying back that loan. Okay. They paid that loan off about 6 years ago, and they still put all that money into the treasury. So the treasury comes in and sweeps those profits off the table every month, and everybody's kind of going, well, where is that going? So anyway, long story short, they're the preferred stock deferred plan. I'm trying to remember the acronyms on it. They came out with this thing in January. It says, we want to reduce the risk on the industry. High debt to income ratios, high LTVs, like 3% down, low credit scores. And then they decided to throw in second homes and investment properties as high-risk loans. Hmm. So in March, they came out with a mandate. They said, okay, we're going to require each lender to only deliver 7% of their overall delivery to us for investment properties and second homes compared to primary residence. Hmm. Well, the industry was averaging about 16%. We were about there, 15-16%, but the mandate came out in March, and then we had till May to get inside that box. Yeah. But they also retroacted back to the first year. Well, it's trying to slow a locomotive down. You can't do that, you know? And so come May, I think we ended up like 10%. Oh. Others didn't make it at all. So a lot of the lenders just stopped doing investment property loans. Wow. And we had to resort, which is good that we're more of a mortgage banker than just a bank, because a bank has two outlets to deliver, either Fannie or Freddie, and sometimes both, where we have both end of those entities as well. We also have aggregators that we can send to these guys off Wall Street, and they saw the opportunity to jump in on this in March. So they came off the sidelines. They started coming and offering some good pricing and everything. So we've been delivering to them primarily for the last 6 months, and not to Fannie, to keep our numbers down. And then 3 weeks ago, with the Mortgage Bankers Association, Mortgage Brokers Association, probably the real estate industry, everybody was up in arms. They sent all this documentation to the Treasury and a thing called the FHFA, which runs Fannie and Freddie. And we got a new chairman on board. There's Thompson, I believe her last name is. And they took a look and said, yeah, this does not make sense. So they unplugged that whole thing. We're back to business. It's great. The rates improved. We don't have to worry about our percentages. It just didn't make sense because in my opinion, Sean, in your opinion, the programs that, you know, Biden is trying to come out with, and I'm not criticizing Biden by any reason, you know, he's pro real estate. You know, he wants to come up the low to mod income properties and so forth for people that need those first time home buys. But we all know a lot of those people, you know, are barely making into those properties through the loan. 6, 8, 10 months down the road, they end up foreclosing. Well, guess who buys it? You and I as an investor, right?
Right.
And I've always said that. It's just a reality. But they don't put a lot of credence into the fact that most of the loans that I do, I kid you not, I did an analysis last year. My average credit score was 772.
Wow.
Average credit score. I know.
Wow.
For last however many loans. And the LTVs were average of 75%. Why would you not want to have that as why would you want to categorize that as a high-risk loan? You wouldn't. They're going to make that payment.
Insane.
That's the government for
right.
you.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm just curious. Are the now that they've lifted that, and then when you did have that Wall Street, are you still seeing that? Are they getting even more aggressive or no? Do you ever see them even getting not 08, but you know, I guess a little bit more aggressive on the now that all that money's there? Or they got to put that to work. Are you seeing anything?
You're seeing the government getting aggressive?
No. God. Well, maybe the private people that came in and was supplementing, you know, the last couple months that you had some of that Wall Street money, you know.
They actually, believe it or not, their pricing was never as sharp as Fannie's, okay? Really? So we were probably dealing with at least a 200 to 600 basis points delta difference because of that extra risk. Because those guys had a risk. So how that relates in layman's terms, anywhere from a quarter point to a half a point difference in rate differential during that 6 months. Okay. Gotcha. It's just that thing away that the pricing improved. And the guys are still in Wausau. They're still out there, but we're not delivering to them anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So let me, let me step it back. As far as like qualifying, I know a lot of people are like self-employed or just started a business, especially during, you know, this time. How does that, just so they understand, if they are self-employed, how does that factor? How many of these conventional loans can they get? And then can you be creative with husband if both spouses, you know, work?
Work, W-2, yeah. W-2 income.
So,
like more than 10, is that the
question? Yeah, okay. I want you to say 10.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, so the first one was, I'm sorry, you had three questions.
I threw like five or six questions, and I do that a lot.
Let me focus on one.
So number one is, say they're self-employed. How does that factor into qualifying?
Self-employed,
let's start there.
All right, and that's a great question too, by the way. Self-employed people, Fannie Mae likes to see a track history of what these people are doing. Okay. Let's say you switched your job tomorrow and decided to become a plumber. Mm-hmm. Well, you've got no plumbing experience. You just started off. We have no idea if you're going to be a good plumber or not. Okay. Mm-hmm. So typically we like to see at least a year and a half, even though everybody says 2 years, it depends. If I can get a strong, healthy tax return, let's say somebody started, I don't know, March of 2000. Okay. Mm-hmm. And they did their 2000 tax return. Now we're in 21. So I've got their tax return as I'm doing this for how many months since March of last year, but I have the tax returns in there. And if I put all the rest of the assets and the credit and everything else, and then I upload it into the Fannie Mae engine, mm-hmm. it comes back. And if they like it and they say, okay, we like it, we want 2 years of tax returns or 1 year. Okay. If they want the 2 years tax return, that's where we have a problem. Okay. If they want 1 year, we can get by with it. But typically we like to see at least 2 year track history for people that are self-employed, even doctors and professional people are a little more easy because a lot of times they're working at a hospital or something. And then they end up going being a partner of a practice. But the practice was already there. They just became a partner. Same with like lawyers. Okay. Those are a little easy to do, even though they are straight self-employed. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Even if they're taking a paycheck from that corporation.
Right. Right.
Yep.
And most of them do create a, and that's another thing. Let's say they do have 2 years return. Okay. And they incorporate and the business is running in the red, but they pay themselves $150,000 a year. Mm-hmm. That business running in the red will come back to haunt them, okay? Mm-hmm. Because we take a look at, you know, the both the business and the personal. So if the business is running the black, let's just say they're doing breaking even, but the guy's paying himself $150,000 a year, we're going to use the $150,000.
Mm-hmm. Got it.
Okay, but if he's got $150,000 loss, that's going to come back to haunt him. I had a guy the other day, he was a W-2 employee, worked for Intel. He made $150,000 a year. And then, you know, we went ahead and said, yeah, it looks good. Everything. We started down the path, finally got his tax returns. Well, he decided to open up a side business with his wife, took a $300,000 loss. Yeah. It's like, oops, where'd that come from?
Yep.
So you want to be as forthright as you can with the loan officer, because they're the ones that are going to help you get the loan.
Mm-hmm. Got it. And
now, what was the second question?
So investment properties, how many can they get that's backed by Fannie Freddie that will get these, cause, and explain the terms that they can get. So, you know, rather than going with maybe a larger institutional lender out there that does nationwide loans, why would they get a conventional versus, you know, one of those other, I won't.
Rates and terms.
Yeah.
Rates and terms are always the best with Fannie or Freddie, and Fannie or Freddie will allow you to go up to and no greater than 10. Yeah. And a lot of times I'll have husbands and wives come to me and say, okay, we're starting to buy investment properties. Mm-hmm. First thing I ask is, are both of you employed? Mm-hmm. Okay. Yes. Are they both adequately employed? Which means they make equal income, which they're probably going to be pretty strong. Mm-hmm. Great. What I'll tell them is, let's go ahead and split it up. Let's let the husband do the first one. And we'll put the wife in title, so she has ownership. Mm-hmm. And we'll let the wife do the second one. but the husband owned the title, she'll have ownership. So the husband can do 10, the wife can do 10 versus having the husband and wife jointly, and they're tapped out at 10.
Right.
Okay. That's, I get a lot of partners, business partners, life partners, wives, husbands, wives, always. And that's the first thing I tell them what to do. And if they can do it, great. But yeah, up to 10, and there is life after Fannie, and I'm living in it, into a quote portfolio or non-recourse or commercial grade loan. They're out there and it's not that bad. Okay. But I mean, the rates are very, very strong and they're not as bad as they used to. But then again, there's a lot of portfolio lenders out there. They're still charging a point and a half, 2 points above where Fannie is. So, you know, you got to pick and choose where you take your loan.
That's awesome. And I don't, yeah, it's surprisingly how many people don't realize that, because even partnerships, I have, number one, we have a lot of clients that take advantage of this and they listen to you. And because, I mean, that's double the amount of property, because it's usually they don't have trouble with down payments. It's just the amount of loans they can, you know, get. They're usually strong buyers. So, and we have guys that like good in partnership together and do this. And it's like they both think that they both have to be on title, both take the loan. It's like, guys, you could do double the amount of property. Or don't
a lot of times
ever told them.
A lot of times they also come to me. It's funny because they'll go to these boot camps and these educational scenarios, and they say, okay, let's set it up as a business. And that's good. You do want to run it as a quote business. Right. They say, okay, well, I went out and got a web page, got my business cards, got a new phone number, I've got my LLC, I've got everything set up. I don't have any money, but I'm ready to go. Okay. Don't do that. Okay. Start off small. Okay. But people do come to me and say, we want to put it in LLC. And that's very important for a lot of partners out there, because, you know, let's just say a couple, three guys want to do this on their together and grow their portfolio. Well, I'm going to advise them the same way I did a husband and wife, whoever's up first, go first and so forth. And then they say, okay, but we want to close it in the LLC. Now, the Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac does not allow for any entity vesting, which is S-corps, limited partnerships, LLCs, anything other than your individual name and or a family trust, okay? And I've got several of my properties in an LLC. I'm sure you do too, John. Mm-hmm. But what we do, and when I'm talking to the borrower, I tell them, okay, you're going to get two hats. You're going to get a loan officer and you're going to get an investor, okay? This is where I put my investor hat, say, this is my opinion only. Mm-hmm. And I tell them what I do, and 99% of my clientele will do, we'll close in the individual name. Mm-hmm. We'll wait about 3 or 4 months, because once we deliver that loan to Fannie, they in turn will sell it to an investor. The investor will go through and do their due diligence. They'll basically re-underwrite it, pull all kinds of report. Once the dust settles, then they set it up in the servicing system. They start shooting out invoices for mortgages. You're good to go at that point. Get your deed of trust, get your LLC docs, send it over to an escrow officer or an attorney, have them retitle it. But I wouldn't necessarily recommend picking up the phone and calling the servicer and say, hey, guess what I'm doing today? That's generally how that's the workaround. You can still accomplish your goals with asset protection that way.
That's awesome. That's good.
So now we've been talking about interest rates, right? So what's Graham's prediction on future interest rates?
We're going to put you on the spot. We're going to hold you to it, too.
Well, no, I mean, I feel that we're at least going to be steady till the end of the year. Okay. And I feel if anything, first quarter, if we go up at all, it's probably not going to be more than a quarter. Now, if I knew that to be fact, I'd be living on Wall Street. But that's my prediction, okay? I think the housing industry, it's going to be strong for the next couple, 3 years, in my opinion.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's still a very good time to buy investment properties. I'm personally on a roll. I've got 10 contracts still in play, just waiting on them to be built. You know, it's kind of like you, Sean, you drag your feet when you build these places.
Yeah.
No, I'm just kidding. But yeah, I mean, I mean, it's a great time to buy. I'm not going to hold back.
Yeah, nice. I agree with you. And we've been on that same, you know, I've said at least a couple of years that I don't see nothing changing. We're just short on inventory. So I don't see that nothing changing.
And I think hopefully, and I say this in the right way, that the forbearance will make full circle. Okay. I think probably 25, 40% maybe that of that forbearance will eventually get to, you know, release and go into foreclosure and we can get some inventory. you know, Biden will want to make sure that the servicers are doing everything they can to keep that person in the House. But there is going to be some fallout. And I'm hoping by the end of third quarter or fourth quarter.
Yeah, it's going to be, my personal opinion, it's not going to be as big as some people say. But, I mean, they learned a lot from 08, I think, and they're going to modify a lot of that stuff. But
well, the problem is, if you know, back in 08, when we foreclosed, it took 2 years to get them out of the house.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, that's another problem.
And it's a big problem right now. I mean, so it's still just to evict and everything. Even though they've lifted a lot of that stuff, it's still, the courts are behind, it's slow. And I don't think banks want to do that. So,
Then, Graham, one question I have. So, we have a lot of new investors that are listening in. And so, what advice would you give a new investor, you know, coming into the marketplace and starting out?
Ask a lot of questions. If there's, let's just say they call you and they talk to Sean, you know, Sean's going to tell them about the products that he has to offer, but you also want to ask, you know, some in-depth questions about what you do, Johnny, the management piece. Even though Sean can sell you the property, once you own it, somebody's got to manage it and manage it well. Okay. Right. So I highly recommend to ask all the right questions. What does your invoices look like? What's your percentage? Tell me about your make readies. Tell me about what's your minimum threshold for repairs. I just ask a lot of questions. Yeah, okay. Yeah. That's important to me. You do have to decide, like I talked about earlier, you know, you want to do an A, B, or C property. A lot of times people that are wanting to dip their toe in it, and I'm guilty of it. When I first got in this thing, I bought my first condo sight unseen for $30,000. So
it was cheap.
but I ended up buying 8 the rest of the year. So those were all good. Yeah. I sold it and made a profit, got out of it. But once you stick your toe in the water, really, it's easy after that. It really is. And everybody's a little scared, a little daunting. I know I do everything I can to put them at ease in a lot of areas. Like I say, I've been working with newbies for 24 years, and these guys all ask the same questions over and over. Okay. So I put it into writing, and I'll be glad to show you where you can download that book. But yeah, it talks about everything in soup to nuts as far as lending, talks about exchanges, the LLC we talked about, talks about everything everybody wants to know about it. Yeah. But anybody starting off, I mean, just take it slow, you know, get with the right people, ask enough questions.
Yeah. I think you nailed it right there. Get with the right people. It's, you know, who you have on your team. Obviously, you need your lenders, you need your agents and your property managers. So having that right team is crucial. So
over the last 17 years of you being a kind of a passive real estate investor and investing, do you still own stuff in Dallas, or majority of your stuff is out of where you currently live? Just curious.
Oh, good question.
In Houston, come on.
Well, I mean, that's 3 hours away. Because what I'm leading up to, you know, I'm assuming a lot of your stuff is not where you live. So so what have you learned?
Here's what's crazy. And I'm not selling my properties down there, by the way. Well, not get into this conversation. all of them were in Dallas and Fort Worth. And then the 08 bus hit. I went down to about 12 or 15. I can't remember. And the last 2 years, I've sold down to about 3. And the reason being is because we saw a significant amount of appreciation. Mm-hmm. And I had an adequate amount of appreciation and equity in these properties. It only made sense for me to go ahead and do an exchange to, you know, take one, sell one, buy two, just mm-hmm. like the American dream. So that's what I've been doing for the last couple of years, is in my area, Dallas and Fort Worth. Now, as you know, I've owned those ones in Houston for what, 3-4 years now. I think they're great. I'm not going to ever sell those.
You've done extremely well in appreciation on those as well, but just FYI.
Really? Yeah. How much could I sell it for tomorrow?
I'm not going to tell you because then you're
going to know. Don't talk me into exchange now.
No. So just keep going. Yeah. What have you learned, you know, having stuff out of state, not where you live, not in your backyard? What would you advise, or is there any, you've said a couple of them already, but what, any major takeaways, you know, as far as,
well, you know, you have to trust the people that you're working with. Okay. There's a lot of things that's going to validate the product, property inspection, okay, appraisal, whether you get viable insurance on the property, okay, and those all have to do with the product itself. So those things are always going on in my mind. I'm just trying to think for the newbies.
What about on the management side? Have you learned anything? How active are you? Is there something that maybe you like to see or on the reporting side or?
Yes. I mean, like I say, I like to have a minimum threshold of repairs, you know, and I think Joni and I, we got it at $200 or something like that. But a lot of times the good ones will email you and say, hey, you know, the hot water heater broke. What do you want to do? Well, fix it. Okay. And, but the management side, I'm just trying to think, actually, you know what, like I said, this industry is so small. I'll ask around. I'll say, do you have any references? And I'll ask around, and not necessarily direct references of people that may know them. Okay. Mm-hmm. Like say Missy, mm-hmm. I could say, do you know Missy's group? Do you know much about their management? Are they any good? You know, same way that I would do the same thing with you, right, talking to Missy, you know, and that speaks a lot. Okay. Right there. But generally going into situations that I know the individual that's selling the home, I already know their management. See, I cheat because I'm in the business. I already know it.
You know all the good people, right?
Yeah. I mean,
you hear all the stories.
Yeah. When I go out to vet all the people that I work with, I mean, I'll go in and I'll look underneath the hood and I look at their management. I go look at his properties and I'm cheating the whole time because I'm shopping. Yeah. You know, I never forget, even Missy, the first time I went up there to Cincy, I go, Missy, I'm not here to buy properties. And sure enough, I end up buying two.
So the key is the new investors need to get with you guys, and you guys have already vetted this stuff out. So, you know,
and I always talk to clients, and when I'm having those conversations and I know they're getting pre-qualified with you, I just say, hey, well, talk to Graham. He owns property that we manage that he bought from us, you know, pick his brain and just ask his 2 cents on it. So, I mean, it's always good when the person that we have on our preferred vendor list and, you know, also our clients of ours, because that shows that, hey, like, we're not just referring you to people just to, you know, there's no kickbacks or anything like that. These are people that actually believe in us, you know, that we're referring you to. So it always pays off.
And getting pre-approved, Sean, is very, very important to not only to you, to them, to us. I mean, we don't want any surprises. You don't want them. You don't want to get halfway down the path and next thing you know, boom, it can't do it. So it's essential to get pre-approval. And people say, well, you know, I'm just kind of looking right now, or I'm in a build job. It won't be done for 6 months. Do you really want to pull my credit? Well, I think Sean would kind of want me to do that just to make sure I know I can have money at the end of the deal. So, and then once again, credit, I told you my average credit score is a 770, whatever it was. The pulling a random pull on credit once every 3 or 4 months, it's not going to sneeze at your credit score. People think it's just going to tank, and it's not. There's several of the things that make it go down, and that's, be honest with you, if you pull credit 20 times in 1 week, yeah, sure, it's probably going to go down. But in the whole scheme of things, doing it a random pull every now and then, it's going to be fine.
Yeah. Cool. Awesome. Yeah. Any, just last couple things, any current books that you're reading now that you'd recommend to our listeners?
You know, I apologize. I'm not a big book reader. I'm a big YouTube guy. And I even listen to you guys. I know, as crazy as that sounds.
That's your number one show.
That's in there. I record your shows. Yeah. I press that button for record. No, I really do like to watch a lot of YouTubes, a lot of educational videos. And there's some really good people out there, and you know of them, you know, Keith Weinhold and some others like that. So I'm a big YouTube guy, not a big book guy. But if you want to read a book, I have one. I wrote it. It's on a website. You can download it.
Sweet.
That's the one I was talking to you about earlier. So I'm sorry, I don't have a book recommendation.
Yeah, cool. We'll put your book in our show notes. And then, at the end of this, you know, send Brett, your link to that, that ebook or whatever that you'd mentioned.
Yes, sir. Huh?
Yeah. That'd be awesome. We'll put it in the show notes so people can, can download that and read it. That'd be awesome.
Yes. Well, Graham, thank you so much for joining us today. It's always a pleasure, you know, having you on, and just, your friendship has been amazing. So thank you.
Well, I just wish I could have come down there and, like I say, stretch the legs on the old girl I just picked up. But
well, next time.
Yeah. All right, next time I'll do it, I promise.
All right, see ya.
All right, thanks.
You've been listening to Inside the Wolf's Den, an entrepreneurial journey with Sean and Joni Wolfswinkle. Tons of entrepreneurial podcasts are out there talking.
Talking.
But Joni and Sean are living it every single day. Their portfolio now includes many franchises and medium-sized businesses. We talk about the trials and motivators of successfully running a business. Join us again soon for another podcast. But until then, reach out on the website at InsideTheWolf'sDen.com, on Facebook at Inside the Wolf's Den, on Instagram at Inside the Wolf Den. We'll see you again soon. This is Inside the Wolf's Den. We'll see you next time.